FM, on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock and this is David Cornett with a summary of the news. The Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, has said his party will block the government's planned changes to the NHS in England unless there are what he called substantial changes. The reform bill, which is on pause in Parliament, would cut management and give GPs more control over budgets. Mr Clegg said the Liberal Democrats must show that they were a moderating influence on the Conservatives. The Chancellor, George Osborne, said he and the Prime Minister also wanted changes to the bill. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, has said the Liberal Democrats should leave the coalition if they aren't happy with its policies. He said the party was being led by the nose by the Conservatives. At least 10 people have died in fighting between Muslims and Christians in Cairo, with more than 180 others injured. The violence is reported to have begun when Muslims accused Christians of detaining a woman who'd converted to Islam. The Egyptian Prime Minister, Essam Sharaf, has cancelled a visit to the Gulf to hold an emergency cabinet meeting. Reports from Syria say the army and the police are keeping up pressure on anti-government protesters. In Homs, people have reported house-to-house arrests. In the southern town of Tufas, near Daraa, it's said that tanks have arrived and gunfire has been heard. The Pentagon now believes that Osama bin Laden was in active control of al-Qaeda from his hideout in Pakistan. A Pentagon source said the compound where he was killed was a command and control centre. The four men in charge of MG Rover, when it collapsed, have agreed with the government not to take any directorships for between 3 and 6 years. The move follows an investigation into the company, which went bust in 2005. The men, known as the Phoenix Four, took £42 million out of MG Rover after buying it for £10 in the year 2000. And the weather, there'll be scattered showers across much of the United Kingdom today, although southeast England should stay dry. Temperatures will stay around 16 Celsius, but feeling warmer in the southeast. That's the BBC News and Weather at 1:02. And we come now to the second of this week's early music shows. Here's Catherine Bott.
Hello. On today's programme, we're going to hear music recorded over the past 20 years by a group now regarded as one of the best period instrument ensembles in Europe. It's known informally as COCO, Concerto Copenhagen. Shortly, I'll be chatting to COCO's current artistic director, the harpsichordist Lars Ulrik Mortensen. But before that, let's hear the band in action. Thanks to our colleagues in Danish radio, we have access to a 20th anniversary CD they produced. And this bit of Telemann comes from a recording of their first public concert, given in Copenhagen's Church of Holmen in January 1991.
Thank you.
The opening movement of Telemann's Concerto for Two Oboes, Three Trumpets, Timpani, Strings and Continuo, recorded in January 1991, part of the first public concert given by Concerto Copenhagen, directed then by Jaap ter Linden. And by the miracles of long-distance technology, I'm joined now from a studio in Denmark by Coco's current artistic director, Lars Ulrik Mortensen. Lars Ulrik, welcome to the Early Music Show at a distance.
Thank you very much.
Let's set out what the orchestra is all about, because my producer has found a marvellous quote from you which describes the ensemble's raison d'être. Apparently, you said, "We play music of long ago in order not to create a museum, but to create the exact opposite, a very contemporary here and now experience." Would you still go along with that?
Yeah, that sounds like me.
You've been the artistic director since 1999, so that's 12 years. What can you tell me about the group's early years?
Well, the reason that a bunch of specialised early music musicians 20 years ago decided to form a historically informed orchestra was quite simply that no such thing, perhaps surprisingly, existed in Denmark. And the initiators felt, rightly of course, that there was a huge gap to be filled in trying to build up an orchestra who would play music which we thought we knew, with a different sound, on different instruments, and with a completely different philosophy. Of course, there were huge organizational difficulties. Basically, there was no organization. There were huge financing possibilities, and there was also a lot of stops and starts in order to try and establish what is important to any ensemble, namely the sort of the core group of players. The first artistic director was Andrew Manzi. What Andrew did, of course, was bringing the entire amount of his impeccable musicianship, plus his not only his international standing, but also his international experience. And that really brought the orchestra much, much further forward than we could have managed, or that the orchestra could have managed, with somebody of a lesser standing.
Well, we've already heard music from the group's first public concert. Sounds pretty good. Was it well received and an instant Scandinavian success?
It was not at all. There was no real sort of experience or expectation or even knowledge to what historically informed performance or HIP could do, or even what it was about. So a lot of audience response, a lot of also critical response, for instance, from the newspaper critics and so on, the whole way that was written about it was welcomed as a positive initiative. But I don't think that actually people liked the actual sound much, at least not in the early years. And that has taken quite a while to break through that. It's not hostility, but it's mostly ignorance.
Yes, a certain bafflement. We ought to like this because it's intellectually sound, but we're not sure whether we warm to the sound yet.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, let's hear something more from the orchestra, from CD this time, and led by its first artistic director, Andrew Manzi. This is a piece by Johann Scheiber, German composer, but he lived for 36 years in Denmark. Now, I would like to say, what do we know about him? But Lars Ulrik, what I really mean is, what do you know about him that you can encapsulate in a soundbite?
Well, he was a composer, an organist, and he was first and foremost actually a theorist. In that respect, he was also the founder of a very important musical journal in Leipzig. And in that aspect, it's chiefly thus that we remember him today, namely through his criticism of the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. The beauty of whose music, Scheiber said, seemed encumbered by an excess of art. And for Scheiber, who was for simplicity and naturalness, it is a criticism that one can almost understand, but of course for which he has been quite condemned later on.
Thank you.
the introduction to Johann Scheiber's Morning Cantata for King Frederick V, written in 1766. It was performed on that CD by Concerto Copenhagen, directed by Andrew Manzi. Lars Ulrich, the group has certainly performed lots of the sort of mainstream bedrock of Baroque music, Bach, Handel, etc. And outside Baroque, I mean, Haydn is a bit of a thing, isn't it? But can we continue and stay with Scandinavian music? Because the next piece of music we've got lined up is by a Swedish composer. Is there lots of repertoire still being discovered from Danish and Swedish composers?
There is still some repertoire being discovered, but of course there's an even larger repertoire which has been discovered but is hardly ever played. And that is another of our focal points with Concerto Copenhagen, that we do feel a big obligation to try and rescue some of that very often very interesting and very original music from complete oblivion. That may be a Swedish composer like Johan Helmig Roman, the father of Swedish music, who was very internationally orientated and who played for several years in Handel's orchestra in London. But also moving into the classical period, both from Sweden and especially from Denmark, there's a lot of composers whose names mean very little today. Names like Kunsen, Gerson especially, and others, whose music enjoyed a huge popularity then, but which has been almost universally forgotten since then. And we do see it as a very important part of our activities to try and give the audience an opportunity to experience something that they most certainly have never heard before.
Well, the next piece of music lined up to play is doing a great service to lovers of the bassoon. I include myself in that number because this is a bassoon concerto. I mean, there isn't quite enough repertoire for solo bassoon, and it's very good to know of another one. But the composer is somebody of whom I know nothing. Ferdinand Zelbel?
You mean you've never heard of Zelbel?
I'm so sorry, Lars Ulrich. No, I haven't. I'll never get into Coco now.
Zelbel was Swedish. He spent most of his professional life in Stockholm as an organist there in one of the big churches there. After having studied in Germany for a number of years, among others with Telemann, he then went back to Sweden and was a very important figure in the entire Stockholm and thus Swedish musical life. And he was also one of the founders of the Royal Swedish Academy of Music back in 1771.
Let us hear part of the bassoon concerto, which comes from a 1994 recording of solo concertos by Swedish composers.
Thank you.
The opening movement of a bassoon concerto by Ferdinand Zelbel the Younger, played there by Concerto Copenhagen, directed by Andrew Manzi. The soloist there was Mats Klingfors. Lars Ulrich, let's get on to you yourself, because you took over from Andrew Manzi in 1999. But had you been involved with Concerto Copenhagen before that?
Sporadically. I had done a couple of projects with them, directing from the harpsichord. But since I was not living in Denmark during the 1990s, it was not possible for me to be here as much as I should have been in order to perform with them more. But in 1999, I had just given up a three-year professorship in Munich in Germany and were beginning to think that maybe I should move back to Denmark. And at that very moment the offer, so to speak, from Concerto Copenhagen to be more closely involved in the ensemble's activities came up. And that for me has been an absolute godsend.
Too good an opportunity to miss.
Yes.
Chance to go home and
and
run this wonderful group. But talking about how it's run, earlier on you spoke of the teething problems with setting it up and finding the right players and not necessarily the warmest of receptions from an audience that then wasn't aware of hip performance. But how is the orchestra run? Is it a collective? I believe Freiburg Baroque is very much a number of different musical directors.
Yes.
And how much say do the players themselves have?
Well, it is not as completely democratic as, for instance, the Freiburgers, but it is definitely enlightened. Of course, the players have their representation in the various boards of directors and the top organization. It's a quite small band, and the way we perform is that there is always a lot of communication between all of us. So I do think that the players feel very much part of the decisions which are being taken and also of the repertoire being performed, which corresponds exactly to my sort of general views about this music, that it doesn't really need a conductor in the traditional sense. It only suffers traditional conductors quite badly because it's not music that needs to be led from the top down. It's music that needs to be viewed as enlarged chamber music. But at the end of the day, each and every player is equally responsible for the final result in terms of the technical and musical energy that is being made, even though, of course, the musical director does have the final responsibility for it.
And how do you personally make the adjustments between directing from the harpsichord and perhaps directing a performance of a harpsichord concerto in which you are the soloist?
For me, that's actually not so different. Of course, the technical challenges that I'm facing when I'm playing a harpsichord concerto are mostly bigger than when I'm, as it were, only playing continuo. For instance, all of Bach's harpsichord concertos for me are much more concertos with harpsichord than concertos for harpsichord. And the function of the string group in that is as important as what is going on in the harpsichord part.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Concerto for Harpsichord in F Minor by Johann Sebastian Bach. And the soloist there was my guest on the Early Music Show today, Lars Ulrik Mortensen, who was also directing Concerto Copenhagen, the ensemble, which is the focus of today's programme. Lars Ulrik, over down the line in Denmark, I want now to turn to your operatic activities. Opera is quite a big part of your life now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We established about 10 years back, a yearly collaboration with the Royal Theatre here in Copenhagen, where we perform an opera per season. And during those last 10 years, we have been doing two Handel operas, two Mozarts, Monteverdi, Poppea, and Ulysses. And that has been a very, very important element in the whole activity of the band.
And this aria features the wonderful Norwegian mezzo-soprano Tuva Semmingsen in the role of Sesto in Giulio Cesare. And here he's assuring his mother that he will avenge his father's murder. Here are the lyrics. Awaken in my heart the wrath of an offended soul, so I may wreak upon a traitor my bitter vengeance.
Oh,
The ghost of my father hastens to my defence, saying, "From you, my son, ferocity is expected." The closing words of the aria Svegliatevi nel cuore from Handel's opera Giulio Cesare, sung by Tuva Semmingsen with Concerto Copenhagen, directed by Lars Ulrich Mortensen. And thanks again to Danish Radio for providing us with that ravishing recording from Concerto Copenhagen's 20th anniversary CD. We've talked about some of the people, including yourself, who've directed or conducted the orchestra, but you get some starry soloists in as well. You have the pick of, I would imagine, everybody wants to come and sing and play with you.
Well, we have been very fortunate. Our dear friend Emma Kirkby has been there a number of times. We work with Anne-Sophie von Otter. And also among the instrumentalists, Alfredo Bernardini, the wonderful Italian oboist. Gottfried van der Goltz played a spectacular set of Four Seasons some year ago. And we have also been doing stuff with Ronald Brautigam, for instance, playing classical piano concertos.
Well, I'm glad you've mentioned him, because we're going to hear from him next.
Oh, are we?
And yes, in a movement from a concerto by Haydn. I love Haydn's keyboard concertos, and I really enjoy his playing too. That's a great collaboration, you and him.
Yes.
But this shows that you move into the classical repertoire with great ease.
Well, I think it's easier to move into the classical and even the early romantic repertoire coming, as it were, from the other side. Seeing whatever repertoire we're performing as the latest conceivable and the most musically and emotionally and advanced that one can. The classical repertoire and the early romantic repertoire is very, very close to my heart. And I also think that we have something to say in that repertoire. I think that the instruments and the whole philosophy of playing make a very big difference in that repertoire as well. Personally, I don't go much further than, say, 1820. So early and mid Beethoven, and then I stop feeling that I have anything to say in what I do, and other people need to do that.
Well, I'm very glad that you feel you have something to say about Haydn. This is the third movement from his Concerto for Keyboard in D. Thank you. Ronald Brautigam, the fortepiano soloist, with Lars Ulrich Mortensen directing from the harpsichord, Concerto Copenhagen's performance of the third movement of a concerto in D major by Haydn. Now, Lars Ulrich, that's very interesting. I was going to say, you know, Ronald's sitting down at the piano and you, for once, are standing up, but obviously you weren't.
Not in this particular piece. We got to like the combination of piano and harpsichord for this particular musical language. Even though I can imagine other ways of doing it, we had a lot of fun doing it this way round at that particular occasion.
Well, I'm afraid we're almost at the end of today's programme, but I mean, we've talked about the last 20 years. What about the next 20 years for Coco?
Ooh, yes, that is exciting, isn't it? Well, for the sort of more immediate future, we have more opera coming up here in Copenhagen. This time it's Gluck and Alceste. We have the first tour of Australia coming up this summer. And there is increasing international activity. We've just been to Vienna at the Resonanzen Festival in the concert house in Vienna, doing two performances of a Handel oratorio, this wonderful first one, Il Trionfo del Tempo e del Disinganno, and more unknown music from Scandinavia.
Well, we're going to have a last piece of music, the most recent track from this wonderful Danish Radio 20th anniversary CD. And I'm going to ask you just to tell me about the piece we're going to hear now.
It's by this most famous composer and non, isn't it?
Well, at last you're delving into his work. I thought you never
would. Yes, exactly. As that implies, we do not know who composed this music. But the symphony, or the sinfonia, it is a very short and very, very entertaining piece, comes from a huge collection now housed at the Royal Library in Copenhagen called the Gjedde Collection. Gjedde was a nobleman from the second half of the 18th century. He was a flute player, so there's a lot of flute music and a lot of flute concertos in this collection, all dating sort of from around the turn of that century, but also containing lots of symphonies and instrumental compositions by a range of composers whom we hardly know of today. Contemporaries of Haydn, Wagenseil, Hofmeister, composers who then had an enormous reputation, which of course was why Gjedde collected their music, but whom today are sunk into almost complete oblivion. And this particular piece, it's great fun to play and hopefully even more fun to listen to. And a very, very good example of the entertainment value, which is such a strong element of this music here. Thank you.
Concerto Copenhagen, directed by Lars Ulrik Mortensen, playing the first movement of a Sinfonia in D by an 18th century anonymous composer. And that brings us to the end of today's programme. And Lars Ulrik Mortensen, thank you so much for joining me down the line from Denmark and guiding us through the last 20 years of Concerto Copenhagen. Here's to the next 20.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Today's Early Music Show was presented by Catherine Bott and produced in Manchester by Les Pratt. More from the Early Music Show next weekend at 1 o'clock, Saturday and Sunday lunchtimes.
The 2011 BBC Proms. The world's greatest classical music festival returns from Friday the 15th of July to Saturday the 10th of September. For full details of the season, go online to bbc.co.uk/proms or consult the BBC Proms Guide, available now.
Well, this is BBC Radio 3, and now we have the first in a new regular Sunday afternoon series, the Sunday Concert. Today it's a concert which was given on Friday evening in Northern Ireland, and it's presented by John Toll.
Welcome to the Ulster Hall in Belfast for the Sunday Concert. Every Sunday afternoon we'll be taking you into concert halls across the UK and Europe to enjoy recently recorded performances in concert. This afternoon we have an overture inspired by a Greek sunrise, a concerto bathed in the warmth of the Amalfi Coast, and a serene English wartime symphony. I'm in the choir stalls beside the Mulholland Grand Organ, looking out over the serried ranks of enthusiastic and faithful Belfast concert goers. The Ulster Orchestra is on stage, and in a moment we'll be welcoming its principal guest conductor Paul Watkins for a programme which he described to me during rehearsals as one long wallow. The concert finishes with Vaughan Williams' Pastoral Fifth Symphony, written in 1943. Before that, Maxim Rysanov will be performing Walton's Viola Concerto, and to begin, the Helios Overture by the man often described as Denmark's national composer, Carl Nielsen. Helios was the god in Greek mythology who drove his chariot of the sun across the sky each day, and I suppose still does. In 1903, while accompanying his wife, herself an accomplished sculptor, on a study trip to Greece, Nielsen was inspired to write this overture while watching Helios' chariot rise and fall over the Aegean Sea. I put it to conductor Paul Watkins during rehearsals that Nielsen clearly enjoyed the feeling of sun on his back.
Oh, I think you can hear warmth in this piece right from the very first note. It's one of the most magical starts that I know. It fits very nicely with the Vaughan Williams Symphony that we're having in the second half of the concert, because again it starts in a very mysterious way from nothing, but you get this wonderful oral picture of the sun rising over a long extended orchestral crescendo, really, which starts with four horns just gently rising intervals of octaves and fifths and fourths blending together to make this incredibly glowing sound. You know, to describe it makes it sound like a bit of a corny cliche, but it really is the most remarkable thing, really remarkable arc of an overture.
And now here is Paul Watkins to conduct the Ulster Orchestra in the Helios Overture by Nielsen.